because I think, number one, I think there's a difference between spirituality and religion. I think religion has absolutely nothing to do with spirituality. It never did, all right? Actually, if you really want to be logical about it and understand the mechanisms of history, religion seems to be a spirit hunter. It seems that religion has been one of the biggest tools used to break the spirit of the people that didn't have religion, to consume the spirit of the people that didn't have religion by the religious definition. So I don't think that, I think that religion itself, all right, religion itself is another mining tool, just consuming the energy of the earth, the human part of the human energy of the earth. But when you look at the number of people, we'll take it beyond people, because there's the plant life, there's all this life. If you look at the amount of destruction that has been wreaked on this planet, because with the religious motive and religious justification, it's been very brutal, very, very violent. Religion is a mechanism. Religion is like a machine that was created by man to control other men, other human beings, created by man to control human beings. Spirit is what we're born with as human beings. Spirit is what we have. We have it. We're born with it. And we will have it in some shape or form till we leave this reality. That's the part of the essence of who we are, is our spirit. So when people start deciding that they're going to give up spirituality and religion, that's what I mean. People really need to think, because that's in the end going to, no matter what the motives and the intentions are, no matter how good these things are, it's just in the end going to bring more confusion. I just think it's a matter of us, and for people that go looking for their spirituality, I think it's just the best way to look is to recognize. The best way to look for spirituality is to recognize. You know, the best way to show respect for the betterment of the community, so to speak, or the nation, or for the self, or the next generations, is to be real to ourselves. That's a part of that spiritual search. Well, who am I? I'm a spirit. What am I capable of? What have I done? What am I capable of doing? How did I handle all this stuff? Do I accept the whole of who I am? Do I accept even the parts of my behavior I don't like? Do I accept that as being a part of the whole of who I am? Or do I wander off into this thing of denial and blame and other things? See, it's about making an understanding of self with the self. And that cannot help but have the effect of being positive to whatever it is that we would call the social change or the good that we want to do in the world. So we just got to treat ourselves better, mentally.
In 1986, Bob Dylan said that your album, a.k.a. Graffiti Man, was the best album of the year.
He was right.
He got that one right.
He got that one right.
Bonnie Raitt said that you are the most charismatic speaker that she's ever heard, and you were called extremely eloquent by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Apparently, you got a hold of 17.
And that, unfortunately, is all we're going to be able to hear of John Malkin's Great Leap Forward. But I believe he is on again on Wednesday. If you want to check him out, I believe that's every 7 to 9 p.m. on Free Radio Santa Cruz. So do check him out, and you know, you can hear more. I don't know about that particular show. I think it was a Christmas repeat. You may have heard it last night. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert, and coming up is Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides for 2 hours. 6 days with special guest attorney David Beauvais from Berkeley to discuss, among other things, the Joseph Ciampi case, where a victorious ruling in a pretrial hearing has shown that, you can't just taser any homeless guy you want necessarily and get away with it. And we'll be right back with that. gentlemen, that was one version of the Mamas and the Papas, Creek Alley, actually from an album called The Magic Circle, which features Cass Elliott, Denny Doherty, John Phillips, and Michelle Phillips before they were the Mamas and the Papas. But, hey, that's the first song on the album, the one that I recognized and one that I wanted to play. So that's the one you got to hear. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Name of the show is Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. I refuse to say Merry Christmas, but ho, ho, ho to everybody out there who's indoors and warm, and ha, ha, ha to those of you who aren't. Yeah, I guess that's the way that Christmas season goes, know what I mean? However, it is the 25th of December, which means free parking for all you folks who are parking in your vehicles, although not after 12 in many sections of the city, thanks to the anti-homeless laws of Santa Cruz. But there are some cities that don't have those kinds of laws. They have just the standard 72 hours and you have to move your vehicle. One of them is Palo Alto. Actually, Palo Alto doesn't even have a sleeping ban, which Santa Cruz has, making it illegal in Santa Cruz to sleep after 11 o'clock at night in a vehicle or on any public property, or on much private property, actually. And, in fact, in most private buildings, it's illegal to sleep in Santa Cruz, strangely enough. You have to be in a house or a hotel to sleep, an actual domicile or residence, legally. So don't fall asleep in a restaurant, and try not to fall asleep in a movie. I saw that happen the other day. The guy next to me was snoring. I think it was a musician, actually. I looked at my watch, and I noticed it was before 11 o'clock at night, so I didn't call the police on him because, you know, I do want to be a law-abiding citizen here in Santa Cruz. But it is illegal to do that. However, there are some people who are fighting such absurd and human rights violation laws. One of them is the attorney I have with me in the studio today, David Beauvais. He was an attorney for a while for us fighting the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, and we didn't quite get that one together. But he has been instrumental in fighting in other jurisdictions and successfully for the rights of at least a few people to do what you would think would be ordinary, innocent, human, constitutionally protected, in fact, guaranteed behavior. In this case, Joseph Ciampi, who is sleeping in a vehicle, living in his vehicle, in Palo Alto. I'm actually going to read a story from the Palo Alto Daily News, which I've talked about this case before, and indeed we had David on the air last Thursday. He called in from Berkeley. This time we actually got him to come down in the rain. I don't know what he's thinking, but here he is. He's in the studio with us. Before I introduce him, however, I'll torture him with this Palo Alto Daily News story, which you can actually go online and read more about Joseph Ciampi, C-I-A-M-P-I. The name of the story is Palo Alto Officer Describes Tasering Homeless Man. It's by Sean Bishop. Two Palo Alto police officers testified Thursday, and that was actually beginning of December, that a homeless man, they tasered a homeless man because he charged at them after getting pulled out of his van for refusing to cooperate. A testimony is expected to wrap up today, that was December 5th, in a court hearing to determine whether the defendant should stand trial for scuffling with the two cops. The police officers described their encounter with Joseph Ciampi, who lived in a van that a resident reported as a suspicious vehicle. The vehicle was parked on Lincoln Avenue, it was just parked there, the morning of March 15th. So this case has been around for 9 months now. Though Santa Clara County prosecutors have charged Ciampi with felony assault of a police officer, Ciampi's attorney, that's you, David Beauvais, says police had no probable cause to investigate and coax him out of his van. On the second day of the preliminary hearing before Judge Thang Nguyen Long, Officer Emmanuel Torres testified he wanted to find out who Ciampi was to make sure he wasn't some sort of sex offender registrant or some pervert, because the initial call was that he was looking at two females. So you're defending sex perverts these days, eh, Beauvais? Let me introduce you. You're David Beauvais of Berkeley, and your attorney is, your profession is attorney, correct?
How you doing, Robert?
Hey there, David. I see you brought your dog with you.
Yes, I brought Parker.
Yes, and we have a dog in the studio. In case you have anybody who wants to talk to the dog, tough luck. He doesn't really talk too well about on the radio. He's a little shy.
He insists on going wherever I go.
Yes. Well, what's the story? Are you defending sex perverts these days, Beauvais?
Well, I was really surprised to hear that comment from the police officer, because there was nothing in the police report that indicated such a thing, nor was there anything in the initial call that triggered this interaction between Mr. Ciampi and the police. What the caller said was that Ciampi had been parking his van outside of his house for extended periods of time, and it made his wife uncomfortable. There was nothing about the way he was looking at her or anything else that that he mentioned, just that she was uncomfortable with the fact that there was somebody sleeping in a van outside their house. And where he was sleeping was on the side of the house with a six-foot fence between the sidewalk and the house and a whole bunch of shrubbery and trees. So he wasn't exactly in a line of sight with a doorway to watch people come and go. He was on the side of the house. There was no entrance on that side.
Windows, perhaps?
There were windows on the side of the house. And he had his van windows covered up with cardboard at the time the police rolled up on him. And he was asleep, and they woke him up knocking on the van and asking.
During the morning, this was? Or?
This was at 10 o'clock in the morning. And one of the police officers immediately accused him of violating municipal code, which prohibits overnight sleeping in vehicles.
And had they been in Santa Cruz and had this been before 8:30 in the morning, they might have been right.
Well, except they were in Palo Alto and it was 10 o'clock in the morning,
and
they were not right.
Because there's no such law in Palo Alto?
There is no such law, and Ciampi was aware of what the laws were, and he told the officer that there's no such law, and she insisted that there was, and that he needed to come out of the van and talk to her. And she was there with another officer at the time. And he said, no, he wasn't coming out. Go away. Leave me alone. She then opened the side door to the van, and he immediately closed it. And so at that point, the police decided that they were going to try a ruse to get him out of the van. And they were going to pretend to call for a tow truck to have the van towed away. And so Ciampi heard this this kind of faked call for a tow truck and immediately came storming out of the van, telling them that they had no right to tow his van.
He came out with his fists up, indicating in a fighting posture, ready to beat up those police officers, thus justifying a possible tasering or possibly lead response.
He says no. The police officers say that he had his fists clenched, but the video that we have doesn't show that his fists are clenched. And he, in fact, comes out of the van with a tape recorder in one hand, but he doesn't have any batteries, so the tape recorder doesn't work. But he thinks it might work, so he takes the tape recorder out with him to record the conversation, which he had done in the past because he'd been, on other occasions, he'd been stopped or, you know, detained by the police for allegedly violating this phantom ordinance.
Sometimes actually having a tape recorder with you can be a deterrent to police misconduct, but
sure.
Not apparently in this case.
It didn't work here. So then he went back into the van. First they start accusing him of being under the influence because he has a skin condition which created sores on his arms, and he was, you know, they accused him of being a heroin user, and they alleged that his eyes were dilated and that he had a bad attitude. His agitation was one factor that the officers claimed they considered in determining that he was under the influence.
Of course, he might have been agitated because someone was pounding on his van, lying to him under color of law with weapons, guns, and then threatening to take his vehicle and dump it somewhere, which was his home. I suppose that might have been one cause for agitation.
That was the other theory of why he might have been agitated.
Yes.
So he went back into the van trying to find a cell phone to call somebody to get some help. And when he went back into the van, the officers immediately pulled their tasers out and aimed at his chest area. And he didn't come out soon enough for them, so they pulled him out and put him up against a fence. And he was facing the fence, and then he turned around. And as soon as he turned around, one of the officers fired at him with the taser from about a foot away. Mm-hmm. And the taser did not immobilize him. And at that point, he began flailing his arms. And what it appears from the video is that he's trying to knock the taser gun out of the cop's hand.
Now, your account of this is not because you were present, but it's a combination of you're looking at the video, you're talking to Joseph Ciampi, and you're hearing police testimony in court?
I'm hearing police testimony in court and watching video. Many of the facts of this incident were not disputed. the big dispute was the legal effect or legal conclusions that you could draw from the facts. And basically, the police agreed that they did not fire a taser at him in response to him making any kind of a threatening comment or lunging at them or doing anything that was physically resistant other than turning around. With that evidence being very clear, it seems that the use of the taser was excessive at that point. But what we did is we filed a motion to suppress, which was combined with a preliminary hearing for the judge to decide whether or not there was sufficient evidence for him to be tried.
He was actually being charged with several counts. One of them was a felony count of assault on an officer.
No, that's wrong. That was in the newspaper, but he was actually charged with a felony obstructing the police. That was the only count.
That's all he was charged with?
That's all he was charged
with. So that sounds like what Donna Dice, the woman whose arm was broken by our local Sergeant Christian Lamas in another questionable case that's dragged on since May 9th and goes to trial on January 20th. She's only charged with misdemeanor resisting arrest. That seems to be kind of a catch-all charge.
Well, whenever the police have injured someone, they always charge them. That's just part of the protocol.
Really?
Well, yeah, because if they don't, then they're leaving themselves open for some kind of liability.
Isn't there a liability, though, for falsely charging someone with isn't there some kind of penalty, civil or criminal, for doing that at some level?
Well, yeah, of course there is.
Have you ever successfully been able to wring that kind of judgment out of a court that an officer falsely charged someone with these things?
Yes, I mean, you can get that judgment, but that's a different kind of judgment than getting the district attorney to charge the police with a criminal offense for trumping up a charge.
Have you ever been able, and you've been doing this for how many decades now, this kind of, you're a defense attorney who's particularly been involved with police misconduct?
I've been involved with police misconduct since the late 80s.
And during that time, have you ever been able to get a DA to charge a police officer with criminal misconduct?
No.
And how?
I never tried, though. I never tried to get a district attorney to do that.
And you're from a pretty liberal city, Berkeley. Well,
yeah.
Well, some think it's a liberal city. I mean, some think Santa Cruz is a liberal city, and I don't think it's particularly liberal. Although your city did call for the criminal prosecution of Bush after he? Oh no, they wanted you to be fired or to be, that's the guy, the Berkeley professor who advised Cheney and Bush and the Justice Department and other parts of the Homeland Security that torture was an appropriate means of dealing with.
They wanted him fired. Yeah, John Yoo, I think his name is.
Yeah, yeah. So Berkeley City Council passed that. But anyway, you've been with Berkeley for a while, You've done this kind of work for a while, and you got involved with this case, and then you finally got it dismissed. The judge ruled in your favor after you had the suppression of evidence hearing for this one felony charge of resisting arrest. We talked a little bit about it a week ago. I'm trying to kind of recollect what we said so we don't cover exactly the same thing. But for those who didn't hear last week's discussion, and you can if you want to go to the Huff Archives, Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a website that I archive these shows at, and it's www.huffsantacruz.org. If you've been tasered yourself, you've seen tasering, you want to have any comments on this or anything related to it, you're, of course, welcome to call in. Your call-in number here is 831-427-3772, 427-3772. And again, we're talking with Attorney David Beauvais, who's defended a number of people in Santa Cruz at different times, and this fellow, however, was in Palo Alto, and you did this pro bono, did you?
I did. I heard about this case, and I was so angry that I decided to take the case.
Plus, of course, it looks like a nice case for a civil response where you might actually get paid something for your time, and he might recover some money for damages, no?
Well, I think it's a pretty clear violation of his civil rights. That was the opinion of the criminal judge that heard the case, who said that their little ruse to get him out of the van was illegal. The judge recognized that, you know, the law was clearly established that people have a right not to interact with police officers and to be left alone unless they're being detained. And in this particular case, there was no crime that they were responding to. There was no evidence that he was about to commit a crime, and he was just a citizen who was in his van and deserved to be left alone. And instead, these police officers refused to let go, and they stayed longer than they should have, and they concocted these schemes to get him out of the van.
Let me play paranoid bigot for a moment here, because this is the kind of thing that, a kind of comment I would, you might have actually read this on the comment section that follows a lot of these stories, in the, like the daily, the Palo Alto Daily News. And I'll ask you this question as soon as we talk to the caller. But the question is going to be, what do you advise someone who's in a house, who's nervous about someone in a vehicle to do? I mean, you know, his wife or his guy's parked in front of your house for days and days. Anyway, we have a caller. Let's see what he has to say, or she.
Oh.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with David and Robert.
Please turn your guest's microphone up. You can hardly hear what he's saying.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, well, thank you.
Okay, that's all.
All right. Strange. It looks like you're way up there. Say something there, David.
Okay.
Yeah, it even tends to go into overtime. It's not clear why that's not working properly, because everything seems to be working right. Maybe we have a bad mic. Why don't we try this other mic here? Why don't you pull that mic over, David, and see if that one works for you. Maybe that's, yeah, that one. You're going to have to kind of fiddle with it to put it at your level, try to make sure the dog doesn't chew it. That's always a plus if they have unchewed mics. And you're going to just loosen it up there like that with that thingy. Very good. And see how we're doing with that. Now, say something. And caller, as you listen in, if this sounds worse, please let me know. Call back, because in the studio it sounds fine. I can't tell from the levels here that there's a problem. But Dave, maybe if you talk more clearly and closer to the mic, that'll be helpful.
So, okay, is that better?
Looks good to me. But again, we'll have to see what the voice of the people says.
I think the caller hung up.
The caller did, and
okay.
But the caller may call back if they can't hear you.
Caller, so, call back and let us know if this is better.
Or if it's worse, actually. That's
or
more
worse. Important. Either way.
Yes, or
tell
you,
us it's okay,
or, you
or
can
not.
Or you can just not call at all, and we'll assume all is well. Or perhaps you can call and comment. Actually, that caller, I recognize the voice as one of the ancient gang of ne'er-do-wells who were involved with one of the legal cases you did here in Santa Cruz, David, when you defended people who were charged, Mike Rotkin, then mayor, was trying to remove from Santa Cruz City Hall grounds who were engaged in a continuous protest against the city's sleeping ban. It's interesting, even when there is no sleeping ban, apparently the police try to go after people who are sleeping, innocently sleeping in vehicles because they have no other place to go. Or Joseph Ciampi just like to taunt people by going around sleeping in a vehicle, or is it an economic condition with him?
No, I don't think he's trying to taunt anyone. I think he's just trying to be left alone. And I think what needs to be said, because it hasn't really come out in the newspaper articles or even in court, the gentleman who made the call about his van being parked there had already met him in the past and talked to him about him parking there. So he knew who he was. The person who called knew who he was, had talked to him about it. And I guess there was there wasn't a meeting of the minds about him being there. The homeowner still wanted him to be gone. And Mr. Ciampi was not cooperative with that entirely, although he would leave for periods of time and come back. He didn't always stay there, but that was one of the prime places that he stayed.
Why did he choose that particular place, and where was it? Was it downtown? Was it residential? Was it near a gated community? Near a school?
No, it was just off of the downtown area, just south of the downtown area on a residential street.
And
I think the location that he picked was probably one of the best locations you could pick without annoying someone. I mean, I think that the way he parked there was to be as inconspicuous as possible. As I described it earlier, he was on the side of the guy's house. There was a tall fence. There was...
Were there other houses around?
Yeah, there were other houses, but he wasn't anywhere in the line of sight of any of the other houses.
But you said that he had parked there for how long before this incident came up?
Oh, less than 24 hours, although the guy who made the call to the police about it said he'd been there a lot longer, but he hadn't been. He'd only been there for a shorter.
But he had previously parked there before and had conversations with the guy.
Yes.
So
and,
he
and the guy expressed concern about, well, where do you go to the bathroom? And you know, the phrase that he kept using over and over again was "spread the wealth." In other words, move on and burden someone else for a while.
Had he had some bad experiences with the guy? I mean, had the guy taken a piss in his garden or dumped trash on his lawn or stolen his electricity?
No, no, nothing like that. All he ever, what he told the police was he doesn't know where he uses the bathroom.
And where does Joseph use the bathroom?
I don't know, but he doesn't use the bathroom there.
Okay. At least there's no evidence that he does.
No. The area at the time was very, there was no litter or anything like that.
Is there a public bathroom within walking distance of the vehicle? That you know of?
I'm not sure. I don't know Palo Alto that well.
because now I'm trying to be devil's advocate here because there are going to be some people who say, well, look, here's a guy who parked there. You know, he was told this guy, it made the people uncomfortable. If you're going to live a sort of a, you know, an outlaw or even a, not because he's not an outlaw, but he's, you know, a lifestyle where you are doing things that a number of people, for good or bad reasons, object to it because they're uncomfortable or they're apprehensive, perhaps without justification, but they still feel that way. Don't you want to, you know, wouldn't it be wiser, for example, to, in fact, to spread the wealth, to move on, not to go to another, a block away maybe, or three blocks away, or across town, not necessarily when, you know, jumping when the guy snaps his fingers, but he came back to the same place that he was told where he was uncomfortable and unwelcome, even though the guy obviously, it's a public place. He has a right to be there. That's not the issue. But isn't the, you know...
Well, that is the issue. I mean, we're not talking about conflict between Mr. Ciampi and the neighbor here. We're talking about a conflict between Mr. Ciampi and the police. And they have constitutional mandates to follow that this homeowner doesn't have. And they are the one who tasered him. They're the ones who forced him out of the van. And it's really about the police here. It's not about the man who made the call.
Did the homeowner testify in court, or did the resident of the house testify?
No, the homeowner didn't testify.
Did you interview him or get any documentation from him of any kind? Or see
well,
him
yeah, we have his call to the police, and that's what the police were operating off of, was that call. So we knew exactly what the police knew when they went out there.
Did he attend the hearings?
No, he wasn't there.
And has Joseph gone back to park there again after this is all over?
I don't know that.
I mean, for me, to some extent, it might be a matter of principle. They told me, you know, when I went to the Metro Transit Center and talked to homeless people, that I had to leave because I, you know, the security guard didn't want me there. He thought I was creating a disturbance, even though he didn't say what the disturbance was. He didn't even say I was creating a disturbance. He just said he wanted me to leave. I didn't. They called the police. They arrested me and demanded I leave. And I'm actually got a trespass case coming up. I've already received the citation in the mail, an infraction trespass case. And I've talked to you about this. I was actually under the wrong law and all kinds of other things. But I've gone back to the Metro Center just to feel that I can be there. I want to make sure that I don't feel intimidated from using spaces that I know I have a right to use. And that's something I do in part, you know, because that's the kind of guy I am, and in part because I think other people should be allowed to use those spaces, and if I am, they're more likely to be able to use those spaces. And partially it's kind of a matter of psychological health for me. I want to feel okay. Somebody has made me feel not okay in a public space because they just didn't want me. They called somebody with a badge and a gun and a threat to take away my liberty and all kinds of other, you know, humiliating and intimidating kinds of things. And if you don't think that, you know, activists, even who are out and on the streets and have done this before, can't be humiliated, you're wrong. It is always a matter of great tension, and it's uncomfortable to be around police officers who could at any time do what these cops did in Palo Alto. They could tase you, and they have tased people in Santa Cruz recently within the last month. So there's a reason people run away and surrender their rights, because they have, you know, they don't want to face this kind of shit. On the other hand, as the advocate for the homeowner, why couldn't Ciampi could have just gone a block away? Did you talk to him about that? I mean, did he?
Well, I can't talk to you about what I talked to him about, but I really think this issue is not really relevant to what we're dealing with in this case with the police in the city. In other words, just because someone complains doesn't give the city cops the right to be creative in forcing someone to give up a constitutional right, so that the homeowner is not feeling uncomfortable anymore. If we begin to allow police to act along those lines, then we cease to be a government that's ruled by laws and the Constitution and become a government where we just carry out whatever the wishes are of someone who happens to have money against someone who doesn't happen to have money. And I have no question in my mind that Mr. Ciampi was treated the way he was because they knew he was homeless, and they figured that he did not have power to oppose them, and that there would be nothing coming back on them for their illegal conduct. I'm sure that that's how they reasoned it out. And that's what, to me, is the big problem here, is the fact that the police are able to prey upon people who don't have power. These are things that wouldn't happen to people who did.
Now, did you find that there is there a pattern of the police either using this ruse or ticketing or driving, telling people to move who are in their vehicles, who are parked legally, but who the police, for one reason or another, because there's been a complaint or because they just don't like the color of the vehicle or for whatever reason, tell them to move? I mean,
sure, and it happened to Ciampi himself. That's why he was so upset that morning when the police came, because that wasn't the first time. And he had been dealing with this issue over a period of years. And one day they came three times. And they would tell him the same thing. You know, you're not allowed to be here. You have to move your vehicle, even though it was legally parked, legally registered, and he has permission to use it. And so, yeah, this is a very common thing. The good news is that he hasn't been harassed since. So we can be happy about that.
So though he was harassed way back in March, and he got ticketed and tasered and taken to jail, right?
Yeah, he was taken to jail.
His van was towed?
His van was towed.
And did he recover his van?
Oh, yes.
Is that because somebody kicked down and put up the money to pay for all this?
Or? I don't know where the money came from, but he did get his van back.
This is really hard. Here in Santa Cruz, it costs suddenly you're $300, you know, poorer immediately once your,
your
van is towed.
Sure, and it was something like that. Plus, he had to bail out, had to pay bail bondsman, and he had to pay for his medical
How is his medical
hospital.
Condition? What have you? How is that looking?
Oh, well, his condition from the tasering is fine. As far as we know, he does have that skin disorder that he's seeing the doctor about.
How about psychologically? Has this left any scars? Or
I think it has, but I think that he's managed to deal with that by becoming even more and more active in the community to stop this sort of thing.
And what form has that taken? I know there's another fellow in Palo Alto also has made the daily news, and I've mentioned him to you. I think, what the hell is his name? Victor Frost is his name. He's a guy who's sat on the sidewalk. He's run for city council. He's been homeless. They've tried to remove him again and again, but he's asserted his rights to be at the place he sits, and he apparently has a right to be there, though Palo Alto has a sort of a limited sit-lie ban, not quite as, certainly not as expansive as Santa Cruz's. Which makes it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a building at any time of the day or night, whether the store is open or closed or vacant, in all business districts whatsoever, in any kind of weather, whatever the hell. And we have the worst. We have what I call the Coonerty Rotkin Matthews downtown ordinances. Though it was the elder Coonerty, Neil Coonerty, who put our supervisor who put them in power, put those ordinances in effect way back in the 90s. Although it's his son, the Ryan Coonerty, former mayor, recently reelected, who has been supporting those laws as well as the sleeping ban. But has there been any interaction between Victor Frost and Joseph Ciampi and other? I mean, a lot of times these are lone cases. These people don't organize with other homeless people who are in the same situation. They don't form organizations like Santa Barbara's Homes on Wheels, which I think is defunct now, but was, you know, active for a while, of other van dwellers who have the same problems.
As far as any kind of grassroots organizing, I can't really speak to that, but I can say that Mr. Ciampi has been very active in his own case and alerting the city to the problems with the police department, going to authorities such as the Attorney General to complain, and that sort of thing is going on. Plus, he's always talking to the media. This is something that sometimes makes attorneys feel a little uncomfortable because the common wisdom, which you know certainly has some basis, is that you just shut up when you're involved in litigation. Don't talk because anything you say could later come back to haunt you in some way. If you're inconsistent with what you said before, could be used against you. But he, you know, what's interesting about him is that even before he was tasered, he'd been active in the campaign to stop the police from getting tasers in the first place. And there was a big debate in Palo Alto about whether or not the police should even have them. So he was involved in that too, but I don't have any evidence that that contributed to what happened on that particular day, because I don't think they knew who he was when they came to the scene.
So I know I've tried to get you to talk about this case for months, and you've kept telling me, wait, you know, put it off. Let's win a court victory, or let's get through these hearings so that, you know, that the statements that Joseph Ciampi makes or that I make won't be, you know, compromise our case or reveal our strategy. Yet Ciampi has gone to the media before and made numerous statements. Were any of those statements, did they come up in any of the pretrial hearings around the, you know, the admissibility of, I guess you were looking for the admissibility of the police videos, right?
No, they didn't come up in the preliminary hearing. Of course, Mr. Ciampi didn't testify at the preliminary hearing.
But he did speak before the media. I mean, this is a real issue for me because often, as you say, attorneys will tell you to shut up, and often defendants will follow that. And so when you try to get the straight story from the defendant or from other witnesses or, you know, straight comments from the attorneys, they'll say, wait until after the criminal case is over. Then suddenly you're waiting until after the civil case is over. And by that time, nobody knows what the fuck is going on. And it's all a matter of some individual attorney and their client getting their piece of the pie or winning, which isn't wrong. It's good that they should win. It's good they should get their piece of the pie. But if this is an ongoing issue, it needs to be discussed and dealt with quickly on a legislative and direct action kind of plane rather than wait years and years for the legal system to slowly creak forward. Don't you agree, or do you agree?
Well, that's always the dilemma in cases where you have litigation going on, but you also have a political component to the case where there is a public interest in knowing a lot of things that are going on about the case. And I don't have any solution to that. As an attorney, my primary obligation is to my client, not to the public at large. So I tend to favor the idea that the client not speak out. But I do have clients, and have had them in the past, who are incapable of following that kind of
whose
advice.
Whose deeper wisdom, David Bobet, whose deeper wisdom goes beyond your mere legalistic trickery and shenanigans.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. I mean, that may very well be the case.
Indeed, indeed. Well, you've defended a number of famous people, the famous explicit players, the naked group of players who in Berkeley were doing just fine. Juries wouldn't convict them, but then they, of course, changed the law so that a judge could rule on these issues, and since judges seem to be either more prudish or more responsive to political pressure, I guess they've kind of covered up more. Or are the explicit players still as explicit as ever?
As far as I know, they are. Now, this wouldn't be their prime season, so I don't know what they're doing these days, but Berkeley was allowing them to appear at the How Berkeley Can You Be parade. So even though they had this ordinance where they weren't allowed to be nude in public, there seemed to be this kind of exception on that particular day. And then I heard recently that they were asked not to participate anymore in that parade naked because somebody had complained about children being around. So I think they're not even doing that anymore, but I'm not too sure about what they're doing these days. Of course, you can still do this in other cities. You can do it in Oakland. You can do it in San Francisco. You can,
And I think in Santa Cruz, at least not according, there's no, I think there's no municipal code. There's a state law about, it has to be with prurient or lustful intent. You have to be sexually, you know, explicit. And then, of course, you're a pervert for life if you
right. Well,
sexually arouse people in public. I mean, for goodness sake, man. I mean,
right. That is different. And that the proof of that is difficult. So, suffice it to say, there are certain zones where you can't do it, and there are very few and far between most places you could do it.
But Joseph Ciampi was neither sexually aroused by the tasering nor attempting to engage in any kind of sexual behavior whatsoever, although it may have given the police something of a charge in a certain sense that they, before they both charged with the taser and charged with criminal offense.
One of the officers said that he had been shocked by the taser.
He himself was shocked in the sense of alarmed or shocked in the sense of electrified?
Electrified.
So, you know, he doesn't know how to use the taser, or he's extremely sensitive to these things?
Well, what he said was a taser wire got on the ground, and one of them just claimed that they got shocked at some point. I don't remember which one it was or what part of the incident.
I have a case coming up, which I've told you about, and I mentioned earlier in the program, about the right to be in a public space on the Metro Center. The bus center here. And I often tell people who want to go to court and fight their infraction cases, which involves no right to a public defender, no right to a jury trial, that you know, it's even if you win, it's not much of a, you're likely to win half the time because the cops won't show up. But there is an advantage. You can get a lot of information through a discovery process, even in an infraction, that might have some value in, shall we say, coaxing the authorities involved to, alter their policies in the future, because it might become a little embarrassing for them. Whereas if you try to get those kinds of records through ordinary public records acts, it's not quite as successful as going to court and subpoenaing them. Has this been your experience? Or?
I don't have much experience with that because I don't do infractions hardly at all.
But I think the rules or the evidence are the same. I mean, the only difference is you don't get a jury trial and you don't get a paid public defender or, you know, a public defender appointed for you.
I'm not sure that they're the same.
I better check that up then.
It could be. It's difficult to say because the way that courts handle infractions is different from the way courts handle misdemeanors and felonies. And one of the big differences with infractions is that ordinarily you don't have a prosecutor there who's responsible for providing discovery. So you end up in court against the cop, you know, like you would on a speeding ticket.
That's true, but I think you can demand discovery nonetheless.
Well, I think you can demand it. It's just a little more difficult to...
And
it's not the processes for getting it are not as formalized as they are in other cases. That's what I'm trying to say.
I mean, what I'm saying is that I think it would be helpful to know how many times police have harassed or ticketed people in Palo Alto for this vehicle, fictional vehicle approach, whether there have previously been complaints about this. It's kind of in the nature of not so much a pitches motion, but a motion to find out, you know, have there been any complaints to the police department about this kind of behavior in the past? Are there any policy statements in the police department about how they're supposed to run their police department regarding homeless people in vehicles or procedures they follow?
Well, yeah, and that will be part of the civil case. We'll be getting that kind of information in order to establish that the city had a policy of violating constitutional rights of homeless people.
There is a kind of a move for the moment to another matter, since I think... Is there more we should say about the CMP case at the moment? I think we've talked about it a bit. I mean, I probably could dance around it for a while and ask you what your reaction was to the officers who showed up, because you did take extensive testimony from them, or you did ask, you know, you cross-examined them. But I want to ask you about the Laguna Beach, your reaction to the Laguna Beach situation, where there has been a new lawsuit filed, this time by the ACLU, which, though it doesn't seem to have the cojones to do diddly squat in Santa Cruz, apparently has an interest in the Laguna Beach situation, which is a town about half Santa Cruz's size. I'm looking to find it in my very slow computer here. And but is there anything more about the Ciampi case you think we should know about before we roll into another subject?
I guess the only thing is that he was offered a really sweet deal that he refused before we went to the preliminary hearing, and that was to plead to a misdemeanor obstructing the police and no jail time and 1 year of court probation, that is unsupervised probation. And he turned that deal down.
I think it may well be that Donna Dice has been offered a similar deal of some kind. I mean, it's an attempt to avoid getting a not guilty ruling or a case dismissed ruling, and then
it's a way of avoiding civil liability
that happens after that ruling, because it's hard to get a lawsuit once you've acknowledged, even with a sweet deal, you're still admitting some kind of guilt, right?
Right. It would actually bar a civil action based upon the same facts. So that's why, he turned the deal down, plus the fact that he felt very strongly that he wasn't guilty of anything.
We're talking with David Beauvais about the Joseph Ciampi case, which recently he effectively won in Palo Alto state court, case of a man who was simply sleeping in his vehicle in the morning, tricked and urged by the police to leave the vehicle in a town that has no law against sleeping in your vehicle, Palo Alto, unlike Santa Cruz, as I said before. And when he refused to leave or came out and then went back inside his vehicle, he was tricked out of the vehicle by a ruse saying, "We're going to tow your vehicle." And he came out to stop that or to protest that, and he was then tasered when he went back in his vehicle again. I guess under the pretext he was looking for a weapon or the police felt insecure. He was a drug user because he had some pockmarks on his arms, which turned out to be part of a medical condition. All of this, of course, based on a whole basically unconstitutional thugging for conservative residents kind of mentality that the police were following, or maybe once they've been called became more of a you will respect our authority and you will do what we say or we will punish you for it. Maybe a combination of those two.
Contempt of cop.
Contempt of cop. So you can call in if you want to talk about any of these issues. If you have any reactions, 427-3772 is the number to call. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to 101.1 FM or www.freakradio.org. Here's the article that I was mentioning before. It was in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, back page 5 or 6, which I called Ritzy Town Sued Over Treatment of Homeless. And that's about Laguna Beach. Here's our caller first, however. Hey there, caller. You're on Free Radio with Robert and David.
Well, maybe he could address, like, I got tortured in the jail and beat up by the cops, and then I went down to the court and this and that. And,
this is
Madison,
I kind
of want
right?
to get out of there quick.
Madison, it is you, right, Madison?
Yeah, it is.
Go ahead.
And so what I want to know is I called the ACLU, but Rockin's on the board, and he's, like, blocking the calls. And there were a whole bunch of other people who have been tortured down there. So how do we sue those guys, the ACLU, for discrimination? And
well, the ACLU doesn't have to do anything. It's a private group, Madison.
Well, I want to hear from the attorney, not you.
Yeah, but I'm more important than the attorney. I run the show here.
Not.
What do you mean?
You all have right. a guest.
I'm a host.
Mind your manners.
Oh,
please.
All right. Well, go ahead, David. Answer the question.
Okay, so...
we're
going to
hear from
like,
her. We're going to hold it. We're going to hear from the attorney, not from either me or you. Go ahead,
class
David.
Class action or whatever. I'm going to get off air.
All right. Go ahead, David.
Well, there's no the ACLU can pick and choose its cases as it wants to, and there's no claim of discrimination that you could make against the ACLU for not taking your case. But there are other resources out there that you should be aware of besides the ACLU. That might be interested in your case. And one of them might be the National Lawyers Guild, which has an office in San Francisco. You might want to talk to them about it. Or just go to your phone book and see what attorneys handle police abuse cases. If there's a pattern in the jail like that, it might even be a class action type of situation, which might make an attorney even more interested than in handling a single case. So those are some of the options. I'm not too familiar with the Santa Cruz bar and how many attorneys here handle police abuse cases. My sense of it is not many, if any. But more in the Bay Area, in Oakland, San Jose, San Francisco, you might have more luck in finding a lawyer that might be willing to do something like that.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah, we do have Kate Wells in town who's done a couple of cases and has, I mean, has done a number of cases, but she's kind of overworked. And, you know, I'm always reluctant to send people to Kate because, you know, we need some other people who are handling these, not just her. As we saw with the disintegration of the sleeping band lawsuit, we just couldn't quite all of us get it together. Ritzy Town sued over treatment of homeless. ACLU says Laguna Beach ban on sleeping outdoors is unconstitutional. This is a story in the AP story in yesterday's Sentinel. It was yesterday's Sentinel. Alan Olson, 39, from Utah, hangs out at the park where he sleeps. December 23, 2008, in Laguna Beach, California. The American Civil Liberties Union announced Tuesday it had filed a federal lawsuit against the city of Laguna Beach over its treatment of homeless people. Actually, that's a photo that shows him, but we don't see the photo. I'm just sort of spinning through the story. Civil rights attorneys filed a federal lawsuit Tuesday against this exclusive coastal town and accused its leadership of engaging in a campaign of harassment against the homeless. The American Civil Liberties Union alleged in a lawsuit that a city ban on sleeping on the street is unconstitutional, particularly because there are no year-round sponsored shelters. The lawsuit was filed in U.S. District Court in Santa Ana. There are even more art galleries than homeless residents, said Mark Rosenbaum, ACLU's legal director for Southern California, yet city leaders have chosen to attempt to eliminate the homeless rather than eliminate homelessness. The lawsuit seeks a change in policy, but no money for the homeless, Rosenbaum says. Assistant City Manager John Pietig objected to the characterization of the city as an exclusive oceanfront hamlet bent on driving out fewer than 100 chronically homeless people. We're a very tolerant community, he said. We have one of the most aggressive programs in the state of California to address homeless issues. The city council recently considered revising the 1950s ordinance that bans street sleeping, but postponed the matter for further review, Pietig said. He said there was no policy to harass homeless people sleeping outdoors, but other officers occasionally ticket people camping illegally in wooded areas because of the wildfire danger from campfires. The town of about 25,000, nestled on the bluffs above coves and tide pools, is famous for its art galleries and festivals, trendy boutiques, and luxury hilltop homes with Pacific vistas. The community with a median home price of about $1.3 million was also the setting of MTV's hit reality show Laguna Beach. There are even more art galleries and homeless residents, yet city leaders here have chosen them. This again, I'm sorry, it's a repeat of this. And let's see, it's a grassy downtown park. This is where this guy was found and ticketed. For sleeping, that fronts a beach and a dazzling blue ocean. More than a dozen homeless people, many with rucksacks, sat on benches. Alan Olson, 39, said he'd been homeless for 2 years and was frequently harassed by police. He's received two tickets for illegal camping in an area on the outskirts of town, he said, and faces a fine of up to $180. Gee, it's only $97 in Santa Cruz, at his court date last month. What was the fine that Joseph CMP... Oh, he wouldn't face any fine. He wasn't violating any law. Whoops. Sorry. They came up and shined the light in my eyes so I can't see who they are, and they give me a ticket. He said, I want to see everything change. Maybe now they can treat homeless better instead of harassing them. Pietig said the city formed a homeless task force last year and has hired a community outreach officer, held community forums on the issue, and approved a $100,000 interest-free loan to a local nonprofit dedicated to helping the homeless. To combat panhandling, the city set up 5 collection sites around the town for spare change that is donated to the homeless, raising $2,500 since July, Pietig said. The city also contributes $15,000 to $20,000 a year to a 41-bed cold-weather shelter run by local churches. So, what more do they want, David? I mean, you know, can't these homeless... what do they want, gold-plated couches to sleep on?
Well, if it's Laguna Beach, I would say that would be reasonable.
Well, what kind of talk is that? I mean, you know, I guess you think these people should be given everything they want. They just come to town, exploit our resources, you know, destroy our views, harass our women. I mean, and then they bring their dogs with them. I mean, what kind of an attitude is that?
Well, it sounds like a rather poor attitude, if you ask me.
Yeah, that's for sure. Anyway, in the studio with me is David Beauvais. He's a Berkeley attorney and dog lover, or at least he loves his own dog, and he's got his dog here. His dog has not eaten any equipment yet, so I'm thankful for that. If you want to call in and give us any tips on how to deal with dogs, or perhaps how to deal with police officers, or perhaps talk about your own experiences, or respond to this Laguna Beach. I mean, if Laguna Beach can, you know, attorneys in Laguna Beach can go up and say, hey, stop arresting homeless people for sleeping when they got no legal place to go. I mean, give them some other options. One wonders why it can't be done in Santa Cruz. You've been back and forth from here to Santa Cruz a number of times. What's your analysis of this, David? Are we? What's the problem here?
In Santa Cruz?
Yes.
Well, it's the usual problem. There's more homeless people than shelter space. And I guess the armory is open a few months a year, and the rest of the year there's even more of a shortfall of beds for people who are homeless. So it comes down to, if people are homeless and they don't have anywhere to go, how can a city tell them that they can't sleep? Seems like something that should be unconstitutional for a city to give someone a ticket for doing what they are biologically required to do.
Now, as an attorney who's had some, has been involved in trying to deal with sleeping ban challenges, at least here in Santa Cruz, you've actually taken depositions or declarations from homeless people in the past, and we didn't really get too far with that. But if you were to advise, can you interpret that for me, please? What does that mean?
Parker is saying your questions are too long-winded.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try to be briefer then, although it's hard for me. And try to control your animal, will you, please? Otherwise, I may have to. It could be Christmas dinner coming up here, Vietnamese style. That's probably a shot. I don't know if
I think he wants to go out.
Okay. Well, maybe I should let you take a breather on this. I'm going to ask you when you get back what is required for attorneys to successfully take a case in Santa Cruz in federal court and win? What kind of expenses? What kind of money? What kind of backing? Give us your thoughts on that when you come back, because you've been through this whole rigmarole before, you know, twice, I think. So perhaps maybe even more than twice. And so.
Okay.
So we're going to let David air the dog, or walk the dog, as the case may be. And we'll give you out there a chance to give a call in case you've been hotly waiting by your phones for me to end my sentence. And don't wait for me to end my sentence, because I never will. But just call in now, 427-3772. If you have any questions or comments, you are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And here's some interviews from a little earlier. Late last month or early this month. We'll find out here. I will clarify that as we go along.
Out of Del Mar, it's about 5:50 in the evening on Tuesday afternoon, the 9th, I think it is. And we're talking with
Robert.
And that's the 9th of December, but we do have a call first, so I'm going to take this call. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Why, hello.
Hi. What's your name?
Well, you mentioned dogs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you asked my name?
Yeah.
My name's Josh Muir.
Gosh Muir?
Josh Muir.
Hey, Josh. I'm sorry.
Hello,
go
Robert.
Ahead. Go ahead.
You mentioned dogs. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that I think about often, because I have a dog that I take most places with me. And as you're familiar with, in Santa Cruz, you can't actually take your dog off-leash anywhere.
Right.
And then if you want to go up in the hills, or it's just really limiting, and it's hard to go anyplace with your dog.
Right.
And yesterday on Christmas Eve on the tracks, I was informed that, you know, the tracks, the Felton, that goes through Henry Cow, so you just can't have your dog there, period. And then plus the dog was off-leash, so it would be over $300 there. And he was kind enough, because I wasn't in the warning registry, which I don't know if that exists, but he didn't give me a ticket. But then today I went on another bike ride, and I didn't take my dog, just because I seem to run into rangers all the time. And sure enough, there's a ranger kind of like making me feel like it was after dusk and I had to move along. But it's just that...
You mean even without your dog, he wanted you to move
even
along?
Even without the dog. Well, because it was after dusk, and then, you know, there's a ranger with his headlights shining on me as I'm taking in the sunset.
Well, wait a minute. Now, where were you taking in the sunset?
Like top of Wilder Ranch.
And is it closed at dusk?
I think it does say that it closes at dusk.
I mean, I've always had a real beef with that kind of bullshit about closing parks, either whether state or local, at dusk.
Well, you know, and he could have been friendly. It's just hard to tell when it's an SUV with the headlights on you and they just kind of sit there idling.
Well, whether it's friendly or not, I mean, whether you want to have friendly fascists or nasty fascists, people who tell you that you're not allowed to engage in innocent behavior on publicly funded property piss me off. Now, I know they'll say, well, we have a rule, we have a regulation, yada, yada,
yeah,
yada, you know, but that...
Well, and I mean, I've been ticketed on the levee, not for having a dog or or anything else.
It's illegal to be...
For being in the no-access zone.
And it's illegal to be on the levee after dark as well.
Well, I mean, this is during the day. This was actually just eating a burrito for lunch.
Eating a burrito.
And I,
had
a $250 ticket.
Oh, that's...
for being in the no-access zones. I'm sure you're familiar with those signs that came up recently.
Yeah, I think I am. Yeah, I mean, I was certainly told about them. I haven't actually seen them.
Well, there used to only be three. And then I was ticketed, and I went to court. And I had a friend who's a lawyer advise me that they had written the wrong code on the sign. And then also advised me that in the zone I was in, it wasn't properly signed. You know, it was kind of like vague whether I was in an off-limit zone. So those were my defense.
And you
my
won?
Defenses. And I won the case. And the next week, I think it might have been 2 weeks, but really quickly, all the signs were changed. And then, and now, I don't know if you've noticed, but now it's all signed. Like they've... I pointed out their elements of where they were remiss.
So you won it on a technical basis, but the subsequent
yeah,
issue,
and I caused them to put up, you know,
right, the
really
correct
thorough
signage. Unfortunately,
yeah,
they're not correcting their attitudes or correcting the substantive
yeah
problem. The real problem, of course, is whether there is any real public safety problem that or even, you know, environmental protection problem that requires this kind of stuff.
I understand laws, and I think of them as being enforced in a, you know, a complaint-based or when there's a nuisance or an issue-based situation. And there are certain rangers and certain, I mean, particularly Ranger Wallace. Ranger Wallace is
that's,
just ready to get a ticket.
Hold it. That's Chief Ranger Wallace to you, sir.
I've gotten a couple, or I don't know, two or three tickets from him now.
He must like you, or dislike you, as the case may be. You know, I've tried actually. I don't know if you're. Are you a regular listener to the show or just tuned in?
Over the years, I regularly and hear
well,
your.
Well, then you probably
voice
know that in Fresno, because there was a lot of video evidence of. By the way, do you have a question for the attorney? Because I've already been criticized for not allowing this attorney to talk more.
I was interested. You know, just if he has things to say about this or if there are thoughts, because it's not something that gets talked about that much, but it's just another way in which
go ahead
we're entrapped in breaking all sorts of laws.
Let's let him talk and then I'll babble.
I mean, the whole trend in our society is to take away public space, and it's manifested in a lot of different ways.
Hold it. Your mic is down. Start again. I'm sorry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I can.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the whole trend of modern society is to take away public space. Isn't there a law or an ordinance in Santa Cruz where you're not allowed to walk your dog on Pacific Avenue?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, and I live on Cedar Street, and so it's actually the block off of Pacific Avenue, so the side streets approaching Pacific Avenue are also off limits.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And in addition, I ride a bike, and I've been told by Bechtel, Officer Bechtel, that I can't ride down or across Pacific unless the bike has a fully enclosed dog carrier.
Officer Pam Bechtel is mercifully no longer with us.
Yeah, I haven't seen her in a while.
She's plaguing some other community now, but we have new rookies who are perhaps even worse, so it's kind of hard to... We may be longing for the days of Pam Bechtel, but yeah, I mean, actually that's true. If you carry your dog, or if you have it in a carrier, if you have it on your shoulders or in your backpack, or perhaps dangling from the back of your bike but not touching the ground, it's legal. Or if you're a tourist who's walking around with your dog and, you know, you look pretty well-heeled, it's probably also legal. But, you know, if you're just some questionable individual like yourself, Josh, on a bike, how do you look? Are you pretty well-dressed, upper-middle class? Are you a scruffy-looking type?
You know, I vary. I clean up all right. I do fine.
Okay.
People like me.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
Ranger Wallace
apparently doesn't. Well, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's just all over the place like this now, and it's just really, really horrible. I mean, my dog is pretty good on public streets, and he doesn't need to be on a leash. And if he isn't on a leash, I'll have people just come up to me and say, your dog should be on a leash. When he's not doing anything. And actually, I think dogs on leashes are more of a problem than dogs not on leashes, because whenever you see two dogs on leashes come together, what's the first thing they do? They get all uptight with each other.
Yeah. Speaking of which.
And he's telling us, he agrees with me. Just
smart
a minute.
Dog,
dogs on leash don't have the opportunity to feel like they can engage with the world. And then even other dogs absorb that there's something going on with the dog on leash, and so dogs off leash relate to on leash dogs differently, and you know, there's all sorts of
Because they don't,
things going on.
They don't feel like they're in control when they're on a leash, and it gets them uptight, and they meet another dog. So there's a lot of things about being on leashes that are a problem.
You know, and I think it's really it's interesting because I try to relate this issue to poor people or to people who are homeless, or they get particularly trashed for their pets. For example, homeless people are not allowed to adopt dogs from the SPCA because they don't have sufficient economic wherewithal. I was actually criticizing this and saying, you know, the SPCA spends more money on its pets than the city spends on homeless people, as far as, you know, I don't have any evidence of this, actually, but I was saying that it seems to be more concern and more shelter for animals than there is for people.
Oh, how about people living in apartments that are not allowed to have pets?
Well, Again,
gentlemen, have a great evening, and thanks for the opportunity.
Hey, thank you for calling in, Josh.
Take care.
All right. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm in the studio on and off with attorney David Beauvais and his dog Parker, in case you wish to talk to any of them, or at any of them, as the case may be. Let's get back, however, to a street break, where we're actually hearing people on the streets who I've interviewed. This, again, is from December 9th, the street interview.
And I see two squad cars across the street. You were approached by a female police officer who suspected the two of you of panhandling in a group of two even after dark, as dusk is falling. But what did she find?
She found that we weren't. But she was really nice about it, too.
Yeah, she was completely fine about it. I mean, I had just put away my sign and we were eating a burrito, and she was like, oh, I heard you guys were panhandling in a group. And I'm like, nope, we put the sign away and now we're eating a burrito in a group. And she's like, oh.
That's good.
Yeah, that's good. Then she asked me if I got my whiskey the other night, and I told her yes. So,
did she offer you whiskey at some particular point? You involved this police officer in some way. Is this some sort of drinking buddy?
No, but I asked her on a date and she said she was married. So I guess that's probably not going to happen.
So, well, have you been out here much today, the two of you?
No.
No, I haven't. I've been...
Now, I think, Robert, you were given a citation for sitting next to a building on Saturday night, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were one of the group of six people, well, I think it was diminished to five, who slept the night there. Four of them actually did. I think you probably left, right?
Yeah, I left. I had to do prior engagements.
But you got a ticket for sitting next to boarders during the Sleep Out Chow Down Cop Watch on the Human Rights Day. It actually, official day is the 10th, but that was the 6th. We kind of celebrated on the 6th. Have you gotten any further interaction with police officers since then?
No, I haven't.
Have you been eating burritos?
Oh, yeah.
Panhandling?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Have you been sleeping illegally?
Every night.
Every night?
And now, are police leaving you alone? Or are you simply very cautious in your sleeping spots, or are they...
Sleeping on private property where they can't get to me.
Actually, it's illegal to sleep on private property.
Unless you have permission from the owner.
Well, even if you have permission from the owner, you have to be in a fenced-off side yard.
I am.
Or front yard.
I am.
Just wanted to make sure, speaking as a man who tries to insist everyone obey the law. We've been talking with, again, your name?
Bill.
And Robert.
Thank you both. Anything you want to say further, or shall I just leave you in peace to chow down, burrito people? So I'm down here at the Safe Sing-Along. It's about 25 to 8. Bravo, bravo.
Time for Huff Song.
Uh-oh, Huff Song's coming up. And I've just heard from an anonymous person that tomorrow at the farmer's market, the ever-present keep out the drummers, disperse the public assembly, green mesh fence will probably be coming up at noon. Compliments of
lucky.
I don't think it's the SCPD. I think it's Public Works or some such thing, or Parks and Rec. But according to this source, the two ladies put up the fence at noon every Wednesday. And at 1, this individual borrows a knife from a farmer at the farmer's market, each time a different person in a different booth, who knows exactly what he's doing. And he gently unties the ties that bind together this fence, destroying no property, really, but putting the fence back in its proper place as a rolled-up, set-aside fence to reopen the area to the public, which has been traditionally open there for 10 or 15 years. I would interview this man, but last week, I don't want to say whether it was a woman or a man, actually, but let's assume it's a man, was doing this, but Sergeant Harms was a... Well, actually, there was, I guess, last week what happened was people walked over the fence by using Brent's large 50-gallon drum. That's Brent Adams, who spoke today at the city council. But here comes a song which is, says more than I could ever say.
Hey, making a list, checking it twice. Before poor folks are naughty and rich folks are nice. Sergeant Baker's coming down. Sergeant Baker's coming downtown. Watch out!
Of course, it's actually Sergeant Bush now. He's the one who's now on the night.
Sergeant Bush? Oh, no.
It really is.
We got rid of that guy.
We're about to get rid of Bush.
It's another Bush, actually. But there is a Sergeant Bush.
He's cloned into copsdom now.
Let's clone him.
So we have two. We have Bernadina and Vision Song Valerie here. At least one listener and a group of three or four folks kind of standing off to the side. And Long Legs Larry has criminally just removed himself from the lip of a planter. I'm glad he did that, otherwise I would have had to give him some lip. What's happening, Larry?
It's so nice to be able to see all the way down Pacific Avenue again. They've unwrapped the building that was blocking the view, blocking the sidewalk. Everything has changed since.
Now they have a large, empty mausoleum building.
Yes.
No plaza, but a nice building. That's the Rittenhouse structure, named after Louis, no homeless in my town, thank you, Rittenhouse.
Credit cards and checks, books, bank accounts, and bills and coins and layaway accounts. Come buy our new stuff, although you do not need it, because you must have it, because you don't, because you know you need it, because you must have it right now. Oh, come all ye homeless, penniless and hungry, to the city council chambers with your signs and sleeping bags, chanting a question, where's our human right? Oh, come let us call to them. Oh, come us, come let us shout to them. Oh, come let us call to them. Let us sleep tonight. Police grabbing people, bringing them all down, passing out the tickets to each camp in the town. Camps that are barely keeping families warm.
Hey, I don't have a chorus for this one.
And that's Vision Song Valerie down here at the diminished but still strumming safe event.
Off Officer Seeley says get out of town. Oh, we don't want you round here. Oh, we don't want you round here. Judges convict homeless each day for simple acts like work and play. Using the bathroom should not be a crime. But if you ask someone here for a dime, you could be thrown in jail. You could be thrown into jail. Lose your job, miss your rent, try to find a place for your tent. Getting some work now will not be easy. Now you're thought of as bad and sleazy.
Say, what are you saying, Valerie, that this, actually, there's you, there's Bernadina, there's me, actually just the three of us here, a couple folks over to the side, perhaps, but we're standing here at the...
Cops have been going by.
Yeah. You say that there are a lot of tickets been given out recently?
That's what I hear. Somebody was saying they're giving away a whole lot of tickets. So that's why it's so empty over here.
I just see a group of people in front of the Del Mar, about six people in a circle over there.
But there used to be a lot more. They're all kind of scattering, you know, because they're getting hassled, so... It's cold, too. You know, they probably tried to find a place that's warm tonight.
You're here. Well, play on. So it's about 20 to 8. City Council resumed its meeting probably around 7:15. I'm walking over there.
You got a life, sir.
I don't, sir.
And this actually is the evening of the last City Council meeting of the year of Santa Cruz City Council. It's one of the few City Councils... Actually, I don't know how many do this or don't, but it takes the whole 6 weeks off after the second Tuesday in December until the second Tuesday in January, the whole month off, I should say. This is, of course, in the time of budget crisis. I guess we should be thankful for the end of the hot air and the nonsense. And but, of course, there are people outside who are cold and criminalized who aren't getting any kind of relief, and the City Council, as usual, nothing strange about this winter, any different from previous winters, is getting the shaft. I should say the City Council is giving the shaft. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. I forgot one thing.
Hi, Madison.
Yeah, I went by the homeless shelter because my mom knits hats for the homeless.
Yeah.
And I was over by Salvation Army, and there were like 400 families that didn't have toys at Salvation Army lined up, and they were... About five women were saying infants because they didn't have anything for infants. And then when I was at the homeless shelter, it was raining and there were about an eye shot, maybe about 30 people who weren't even going inside because it was probably too many people. I didn't go inside. And it was Christmas Eve and I'm dropping off a couple of gifts, you know, and they were so thankful. But I felt that everyone there should have had a new blanket and a gift in their hand and some hot soup. And here are all these people in Santa Cruz pulling up at Costco, loading, you know, one or two or three carts full of stuff. And nobody was driving by and dropping even one thing at the homeless shelter. I was the only one over there, and I gave two baby hats marked, you know, girl, boy, or unisex, or whatever, and then... One man was there, and he had no blanket. And so I had a blanket in my car. I just took it out and gave it to him.
Good for you, Madison.
Well, I want to know, you know, Santa Cruz, Fifth House crowd. We've got all these people. I mean, no, some people, there are usually a few people that do a lot of donating and nobody else does much. And I want to see a line of cars down there with people handing, even if it's a bag of noodles.
Well, that's the trouble with private charity, you know. That's when you... When you rely on private charity to provide some kind of help, and then you set up laws that criminalize people for sheltering and protecting themselves or getting together in groups to help each other with tents and warm spaces, then, you know, you get more misery.
Well, you know what? If you live in this town and you have not visited the shelter, then I would, you know, I wish on you to spend one day with the Damon. If your life, you know, one day rot in hell because you didn't go down and help somebody, to be quite honest.
Thank you,
Madison.
I mean,
it was just here it is, Christmas Eve, and this man I handed to, he was almost in tears. He was so touched. He was two little baby hats.
Yeah, I know.
And no one else was down there. Shame on you, Santa Cruz. Merry Christmas, but besides, and Happy New Year.
Oh.
But shame on you.
Well, I think it's not just Christmas. It has to do with what happens every, needs to happen every day of every night of every year. And that's what I find out twice a week. And I put out that information so far to no avail. Any comments, Father Christmas, or David Beauvais, as I sometimes call you?
The criminal liability for aiding and abetting a person who might, you know, wrap themselves up in a blanket.
Yeah, that's true. It is illegal in Santa Cruz to put out bedding after 11 o'clock at night, and that has been construed to be, in some cases, wrapping us up with a blanket, though not so much recently, although it has actually come up occasionally when we've looked through the files trying to get together a sleeping ban lawsuit like they're doing in Laguna Beach and Sacramento and have done successfully in San Diego and Los Angeles and through threats to do it have stopped sleeping bans in Richmond and Fresno. So, I agree with you on that one, Parker. Parker has his own views on that situation. Anyway, you can call in with your thoughts, 427-3772. Here's some more street interviews, and we can interview you, too, if you call in.
And there were two police officers in the back, one in uniform, Officer Klein, and then the Deputy Chief, Kevin Vogel, in a business suit.
And I'm talking about the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, the last one of the year, where the new council members were sworn in. And this was, I didn't really record much of this. I recorded some interviews afterward, and that's what you're going to hear. It was a little, I was criticized because when Tony Madrigal was sworn in, I distinctly said from the back of the room when he was asked whether he would uphold the Constitution and, you know, support the laws of California and the rights of the citizens, I said, liar. And everyone was shocked at what I said, and I was then warned by the mayor that similar comments would result in my exclusion and eviction and so forth. And I was even cautioned by a fellow who has been with me on protest, Micah Posner. Why did I do that? You know, it was uncalled for. And I said, no, it was, you know, it's sort of an obvious response to Madrigal's record. And that, frankly, of every other city council member on this issue for the last 4 years around the right to sleep legally, not anywhere, not everywhere, but somewhere in Santa Cruz. You're on free radio.
Yes, I have a question for David Beauvais.
Who is this calling in, I might ask?
This is the infamous Becky Johnson.
Becky Johnson?
Yeah.
Becky Johnson, what you got?
Well, I know that there is this other case involving this sort of miscreant individual who many moons ago did sort of a half-hearted so-called Nazi salute in a city council chambers. So my question to the attorney is, that City Attorney John Barasoni said to a Sentinel reporter that they spent over $100,000, you know, defending the four city council members on this case. And I was wondering what his comments, what he thinks of that amount of money that they spent. Is that a real number? And has he and Kate Wells spent an equal amount of money on defending this miscreant?
Let me clarify for those who don't know what the caller is talking about. In 2002, Mayor Christopher Crone cut off a speaker who was trying to raise an issue about another guy who was being hustled out the door, and she also wanted to speak on some peace issue. And he cut her mic, and he threatened her with arrest. And as she left the podium, I was standing waiting in line to speak, and I raised my arm in a brief mock Nazi salute. What that means is I wasn't really a Nazi and I wasn't really supporting National Socialism. I was sort of saying to the council silently and to the community who was watching, you're acting like a bunch of Nazis, without disrupting the business, because it would have been disruptive if I'd stood up and shouted and started stopping business. But at that point, I was then, the meeting was recessed. I was told that I had to leave. I refused to leave and I was arrested. And the case became a lawsuit in federal court where it's 6 years later, it's still sitting. And your question is, I guess 2 years ago when the case came back to federal court again after being bouncing back and forth, you know, the city attorney had spent $100,000 plus on this and you're wondering again, what, you know, is that a real figure? Rephrase the question one more time.
Well, did city attorney John, is 100,000 plus, is that what you would consider a legitimate amount of legal work that would have been done by one side of that case, considering you were one of two attorneys who were doing the work on the other side of that particular case?
I don't think that number is too far out of line. I haven't seen their billings, so I don't really know how much they've put into it. But
we're talking $300 or $400 an hour, right?
Yeah, and the case has gone up to the Ninth Circuit twice. So there's been two appeals, and there's been work in the trial court as well. And there have been settlement conference, evidentiary hearing in the trial court. I think that probably 100,000. It sounds a little high to me, but not much high.
How much would you be expecting to recover, you and Attorney Kate Wells, if you win, in terms of attorney's fees?
I don't know. I think we probably have 400 or 500 hours in the case. And I don't know what that would compute out to, probably 80,000, 90,000.
Does that answer your question, caller?
Wow. Yes, thank you so much.
All right. I know that you've been having an online endless battle with Bigots United on the Sentinel forums, which is the comment.
Now they're my fans.
Yeah, which the comments, it's the comments section, which you find at the end of every Sentinel article. If you want to go online and read Sentinel articles, you can catch Becky Johnson being called a fat twat and all kinds of things.
I have a lot of junk in my trunk, and that draws a lot of fans.
They don't seem to respond to your arguments, but rather to what they regard as your appearance. So,
the terms of service for that particular forum outlaw those kinds of comments. They're a violation of the terms of service.
Right, but you still get that same attitude. It's amazing. I keep reading, I read this ongoing battle you have about issues like the question of, is it appropriate to raise your arm in a mock Nazi salute in a city council session, which obviously I think it is, and so does so do you, Attorney David Beauvais, I assume.
I don't think it rises to the element of a disruption.
Right, I mean, but they don't think so, the people on the forum, or else they have such hostility towards me and you that anything we do, if they would be a cause for harsh criticism and immediate dismissal. It's kind of hard to catch anything rational out of that. Anyway, thank you for calling in. Anything else you want to suggest or query or comment?
Let's see. It's I want to wish everybody a happy fifth night of Hanukkah.
And I would like to remind people that Zeus's birthday is coming up in February. Let's all throw a little incense on the altar. Could we please?
And you should double your tzedekah.
Yeah, and let's not forget,
Athena.
Athena is another goddess we want to consider in this whole situation.
The fifth day of Hanukkah is a very good day for giving gelt.
And I also want to point out that Winnie the Pooh is one of my favorite mythological characters. But we won't get into that at this time. Anyway, never talk to an atheist about Christianity or Judaism unless you want to get those kinds of comments. Thank you, Becky. Good luck. keep at it.
Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open, 427-3772. And street interviews are back on unless you have anything to say, David Beauvais.
I'm fine. Go ahead and play some interviews.
All right, then.
I spoke to Kevin earlier. He's the immediate superior of the records officer, Tricia Hewsom, who has repeatedly stonewalled me on divulging various records. I've written him, asking him to give me the written authorization and assurance that if I come down to the police station with a tape recorder or a video camera in hand, that I'm not going to be refused service for that reason alone. And he's refused to do that. And when I tried to talk to him about it today, he was very jovial and friendly. But he said, come on down to the police station. I said, will you put me something in writing that guarantees I'll be served regardless of whether I'm there with a camera or an audio recorder? He said, no. city attorney has also already sent you a letter saying essentially they feel they have the right to prohibit such things, which of course they don't. Members of the public can record their transactions if they want.
Let me ask you about that, Attorney Beauvais. I know you haven't got your law books with you, but what's your feeling? If I'm engaging in a public interaction with an official, have I have a right to record that? Is there some expectation of privacy?
Well, I think there might be a difference between if you're talking to somebody on the street or in a public forum, or you're talking to somebody in their inner sanctum. They might not expect to be recorded in the latter situation, but I think in the former situation they would certainly expect to be recorded.
What about the window of the police station where they are videoing you as you stand there, and you've had some problems with them in the past, so you're making an audio recording, so there'll be a clear record of the transaction.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that at all.
Well, what if the city, let's say in the wake of one of the cases that you actually took, the case of the injunction against the Coffee Klatch 3 in 2001, this is actually what happened in the city, after several of us, including the caller just called in, Becky Johnson, attempted to encourage homeless people to speak to people during this winter season, way back in 2000, when Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice had just come in, asking that more shelter be opened or that people be allowed to provide their own shelter. We were then told to leave, and eventually a lawsuit and an injunction was secured against us for just simply sitting in a public office during the time that, you know, people are allowed to do that and wait for a city council member to show up so you can talk to the city council member, register a concern or protest, ask that a special session be held, and encourage homeless people to do the same. We actually provided, I guess, coffee outside. But the point here was that we began recording the whole procedures when we heard from Mayor Fitzmaurice that he regarded us as being disruptive. We wanted to document the fact that we were speaking in ordinary tones of voice. We were not being abusive or obscene. We were not interfering with business in any way. But in fact, what happened shortly after this, they secured an injunction against our doing this, which was ultimately dissolved 6 months later, thanks to your help, David, and that of Kay Wells. But they then began posting, both at the police station and other places, you are not allowed to make an audio recording of anything that happens in this office. What's your reaction to those kinds of signs that are posted both in the police station and now in the city council offices?
Well, I think they go too far. I think you can have reasonable rules to avoid disruption of a business place, but I don't think that's what this is targeting. The rules about recording are, when it comes to recording of a conversation, face-to-face conversation, is if the communication is confidential, then you need to ask for permission to record. If it's not a confidential communication, then you can record it. So I don't think those kinds of rules, I think they go far beyond what the law would consider to be an illegal recording. And as long as it's not, you know, disruptive of the particular business location, or it's not a place where confidential communications ordinarily occur, that could be picked up. I think that they really don't have any right to do that.
What would you say if I told you that, as in fact I already have, that I've made Public Records Act requests, they've told me those requests are available, I come down with the money to pay for the copies of those requests, and the person at the counter then tells me, I will not give you that request unless you turn off the tape recorder. What would be your reaction to that?
Well, as I said, I don't think there's anything illegal about recording in that situation, but you're really asking me a different question, and that's how badly do you want to get the material you came down there
for?
Well,
do they have an obligation to provide it, even if I'm making a recording?
Well, I think they have an obligation to provide it if it's material that comes within the Public Records Act that's, you know, accessible to the public.
But they've already acknowledged that because they said it was there waiting for me, but they refused to give it to me.
Well, then I suppose what you'd have to do is go to court and get the court to compel them to give it to you.
Which would cost hundreds of dollars, right?
Right.
Well, my response would be simply to bring in a video crew and record them doing it. and then put that up on free radio, or I should say not free radio, but on some, you know, I don't know, Facebook or some sort of public video service, so people can see how their police department is responding to Public Records Act requests when, you know, individuals are simply trying to say, look, treat us properly, treat us decently, treat us professionally, and don't try to, you know, withhold information or demand a standard of conduct that is, you know, unconstitutionally restrictive. Anyway, so now that I've secured your consent on that, I'll, of course, have to subpoena you into court for your opinion at a later time. Getting back to this again, you're listening to a kind of a monologue of mine to be followed by some interviews at the last city council meeting of the year. And if you want to call in, we have about 20 minutes left in the show. 427-3772 is the number to call. I also want to give you kind of a heads up, listeners, for those of you tuned to the Sunday show, we're going to have some special guests. We're going to have three anti-psychiatry activists. One of them you've heard before, Jim Gottstein. He's an Alaska attorney who has a mixed record, but some successful challenging, requiring the courts to and psychiatrists to allow the least restrictive method of drugging, for instance, and allow people to be fully informed and to make real choices before they're forced to take psychiatric medication. We're going to be talking with him. He comes on at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. Before that, we'll have at 9:30 Kathy Zetkin, who's going to be on. She's a longtime activist and advocate up in Berkeley for the rights of psychiatric patients. We did ask George Cavallo to come on, but he has not returned a call. In fact, he hasn't returned a call in years. He's our local psychiatric advocate. If you have more success with him than I do, please let me know. It's really hard for me to avoid calling someone a worthless scumbag on the air when I feel that way, but I don't think he is necessarily a worthless scumbag, but he certainly is not particularly responsive, I think, to the needs of the community in this regard. I think people need to know what their rights are, and if it's that hard to communicate with him, it says something about what he's doing. So, George, I would appreciate it if you'd call in at some point and let us know what's going on. It is a Christmas season. It's a busy season, but this seems to be a pattern in your case. Anyway, back to street interviews, and again, we're talking about the evening of the last city council and the coronation of four city council members.
I'm not aware that anyone has ever challenged that, and that, of course, is what's likely to be happening at some point. Kevin didn't want to be put on tape on any of this, or actually the issue didn't come out. We talked about it informally, but he continued to give me no reassurance.
And that, again, is Kevin Vogel, deputy police chief, who is the superior to the records manager, Tricia Husum, at the police department. And that had to do with what we were talking about a moment ago, which is the right to get public records. I was trying to find out how many arrests or problems there have been on Pacific Avenue around the drum circle and such like things in order to get some idea of whether there really are problems in these public spaces that the police have documented instead of just sort of vaguely referred to in sort of ominous terms about drugs and so forth and, you know, problems of blocking traffic, how many citations have actually been issued.
So public records continue to be elusive at the Santa Cruz Police Department. So Catherine Byers has just been sworn in, and Don Lane is taking his seat, and they're all being congratulated. The one shaking hands. Didn't hear any hissing in the audience, unfortunately. And Porter and Riley say goodbye. Have they given their goodbye speeches? Here we go again. This is Madrigal taking the oath of office.
The Constitution of the State of California, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties Well, I think there's discharge duties.
On which I'm about to enter.
Wire.
That was the volume which I spoke at the city council meeting, but it was so, the room was so hushed that everybody heard it, and it was considered to be a very bad thing to say about a city council member.
Get out. Go away.
No chance.
And I believe that was Nora Hockman who was saying, get out, go away. This is the same woman who pushed her way into line in front of us in order to speak at the oral communications period, which had been delayed until the very end of the evening. So people who had come in and normally expected to speak the whole beginning of the session at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or then later at 5:30 or 6 o'clock when the afternoon session was over, were forced to wait until the very end, 8:30 or 9 o'clock. And she had decided, Nora's is an activist who once had sort of a fair-haired position. She's a union organizer. I like some of the things she's done. I don't like some of the other things she's done, but she regards me as an inveterate opponent of hers. I'm not really, but, you know, she apparently likes Tony Madrigal or maybe just doesn't like me. Anyway, that's what that's about.
Anybody?
Walk the walk, Tony. Don't just talk the talk.
Hey, how you doing, Micah? I just got to tell you about.
And that was me saying, walk the walk, don't just talk the talk. Again, it was said in the middle of clapping, and I regard it as the same kind of a comment that some people react with clapping. I react with a comment, you know, walk the walk. Do what you say you're going to do. Don't just give us a lot of hot air. And the next voice you're going to hear is that of Micah Posner coming back to criticize me for having done that.
Yeah, I think it butts out of line. You and others do, too. Yeah.
So, Robert even warned for speaking out, so...
That's Mayor Coonerty warning me, saying I've been warned for speaking out. And actually, I haven't been. He's just mentioning it now, but he's warning me.
My last formal act is there. now it's time for remarks by incoming council members, and they'll give them in the order in which we are sworn in. These are also going to be my remarks as outgoing as mayor. I just want to take an opportunity to thank the community. It's been an honor and a pleasure to serve as the mayor of this town.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to avoid burdening you and me with all of this. It actually was on community TV. It is replayed. It is also available at the city council offices for, I think, $2 or $3 if you want to hear Ryan Coonerty praise himself and thank the community for this and that. It's really important to be balanced in one's critique of these officials and to find something positive to say about Coonerty. Well, I will say that at least he has opposed the new UCSC regulations that, according to Good Times Reporter, require you to get special permission from a designated university representative to even attend a political rally on campus with a sign. Both he and Rotkin have opposed this. Of course, you know, you have to be blind, deaf, and dumb, and born in the 14th century, and, I don't know, a follower of some, you know, autocrat not to oppose it. But the question, of course, for me is always, what does Coonerty do in his own backyard where he has real power? And he's a constitutional lawyer. At least that's how he calls himself, even though he's not apparently licensed to practice law in California, but he is licensed in D.C., as he tells me. So, you know, he teaches classes at Cabrillo. He teaches classes at UCSC. But he has been an inveterate supporter of the sleeping ban, and he has pushed new laws which criminalize all public assembly in what is now 10 square blocks in Santa Cruz, the parking lots of Santa Cruz, the publicly funded open public parking lots. You're not allowed to be there at all unless you're walking directly through, unless you're parking a vehicle or a bicycle, and then only for 15 minutes, and only if you're parking or retrieving a vehicle. Hence, if you sit in your car in the rain in a public parking lot, that's illegal under the Coonerty law. I'm sure David Beauvais will be taking up a strong lawsuit against that law at the earliest opportunity. David, any comments on that particular ordinance?
Well, it's the same kind of absurdity that I was talking about before, where we keep withdrawing public space from the public and create a host of rules and regulations to keep people from using the space or enjoying the space. So this is something that comes up a lot with demonstrations where we've now designated free speech zones, which are a small part of the total public space, and said, well, if you're going to oppose something or want to express your opinion about something, you have to go here and do it over here, but not over there. And it's usually someplace far removed from the focus of what your demonstration is about. You know, for example, if you're objecting to a meeting of the G8, you're not allowed to demonstrate across the street from where the GA is meeting. You have to go, you know, 2 miles away into some back lot or something.
Oh, but Mayor Coonerty would respond to you, Attorney Beauvais. Parking lots are not intended as for demonstration zones, and if there were some event happening in the parking lot that would be open to the public anyway, then you could go there and you could demonstrate. But generally speaking, we have to cut down on crime, drug use, car theft, vandalism, loitering, and other criminal problems in Santa Cruz by making sure that people don't hang out in the parking lots, littering, drinking, causing trouble.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the history has been in Santa Cruz of people doing terrible things in parking lots, but it just sounds to me like a bizarre law. I mean, I've never heard of a law like that anywhere else.
Berkeley actually has a somewhat similar law, not quite the same, that when challenged, Mayor Coonerty suggested that Berkeley and San Jose have similar laws. San Jose has one for private parking lots. Berkeley has a kind of a law like that for public parking lots, but Santa Cruz's, I think, is more restrictive. And also, when it recently was requested on the one-year review of the law, after it had been in effect for a year, the police department refused to provide stats to the downtown commission, saying that they would have to be ordered first to do so. And better not bring a tape recorder with you when you order those stats. Anyway, you've got 11 minutes there, all you callers out there. If you have anything to ask a genuine civil rights attorney who is here just trying to, you know, take a breather on Christmas Day and being forced to put up with all kinds of questionable questions here in the radio station. So you can join the questionable questioning if you'd like. 427-3772. And while you're making up your mind about that, I will see if I can spin ahead to another... Oh, here's an interview that might be of interest. This is Dennis Adams, who's a pastor who every Sunday does a meal that's now going to be in the Vets Hall. And actually, he was banned from the Vets Hall for a while, but now he's back. He was serving at the town clock on Sundays at 2 o'clock. Good meal, good hot meal. And we'll talk with him, or you'll hear me talking with him. Or I should say, rather, first you'll hear this caller, and then you'll hear me talking with him. Hey, caller, what's up?
I am the Pope.
You are who?
The Pope.
You are the Pope.
Ratzinger.
How come you're not speaking Italian if you're the Pope?
Ratzinger. I speak German.
Say that again?
German is a Ratzinger, Pope, the German.
You're speaking German. Okay, well, translate it into English because we have a very illiterate population here. So what have you got to say for yourself, Pope?
The Pope Ratzinger,
I have a little trouble hearing you because there's somebody drumming in the next door, but go ahead.
The drumming circle. They are the evil ones.
Yeah, but do you have any questions for our attorney? We only have 10 minutes left in the show there, Pope.
I say that this is the night of the night, the Christmas night. You should practice love towards Ryan Coonerty.
Practice love for Ryan Coonerty. Uh-huh.
You should say that I embrace you, Ryan.
You
should prostrate yourself and say that... That I no longer hate ya.
Oh, I never did. The guy is kind of too innocuous to hate. He's just, you know, he kind of shakes
your
head.
Then hate him tonight. Hate him.
You want me to hate him? But it's Christmas evening.
Yes, because
what would our Lord say?
One way or the other, because I am sick and tired of you talking about
me. You're tired of Ryan Coonerty. Well,
no.
You're tired of me.
No. It's humorous to me. But I think that for the sake of your own mental sanity,
yes,
which you do not possess.
Yeah, certainly not. No, I agree with that.
Well, Merry Christmas and ho, ho, ho.
And, you know, ha, bum hug to you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
Don't call me ho.
Ho, ho. Well, there you go. At last, a caller of a different color or a different odor or something. You have 8 minutes to call in, 427-3772. In the meantime, we hit the streets.
Blah, 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 and then you...
There really is a street interview coming up. Hold fast there, listeners.
A quick word from Dennis Adams here. We're here at back of the Potter's Hand. They actually allowed you in the vet's hall, Dennis?
Yes. They let me in the vet's hall for 8 weeks during the rain, and that's because of the Veterans of Foreign Missions. It's been excellent.
That's great. And
Foreign Wars.
So every weekend now, only when it's raining or even if
for
it's not?
For the next 8 weeks.
And that's starting this week?
Started last week, so we got 6 weeks left.
So it's every day, every Sunday at 2 o'clock, today being the 21st of December.
1 o'clock. We changed it to 1 o'clock because we're inside now, so...
Okay. Looks like you got your cups, your coffee. What was for dinner? What did we miss today?
Ham, mashed potatoes, green beans, rolls, everything. It was a beautiful meal, cookies, coffee, water, soda.
I've heard that Santa Cruz Revival has been hassled for singing songs in front of Borders.
I don't know about. I haven't heard about that one yet.
Yeah,
no.
I just wondered if you'd heard anything about that. That was actually around a little bit before Thanksgiving.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow.
Well, I'm going to let you go because you've been working hard, and now it's time to do a little playing, Dennis.
No, I'm going to go home and rest. I've been up late, get this meal together, cooking it fresh this morning, and getting it ready for good people.
Even bad people.
Even bad people.
Because all people are good people.
That's true.
You're here.
Thank you, Robert. God bless.
Thanks, Dennis. How can people help with the Potter's Hand if they'd like to?
They can come and volunteer with us. Come down and stand in line. Help pass out food or take.
Every Sunday at the vet's hall.
Sunday at the vet's hall, 1 o'clock basement, the bunker.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
That's not bunk.
No, that's not bunk.
So it's a light sprinkle, actually, heading for a heavier rain downtown. It's about 3:15 on a Sunday, the 21st of December, 2008. The umbrellas are out. I've gotten an interesting report from yesterday's New Leaf Market area, I believe it was New Leaf Market, where Suzanne, or Zan, as some call her, was doing her usual musical number, perhaps with drums, perhaps with some other instrument. She's approached by Officer Winston around 9:30 in the evening, demanding she leave. And we're on the avenue again. Last night, Suzanne was apparently told by Officer Winston she couldn't perform music after dark because it was panhandling. She stood up to him, though apparently somewhat apprehensive and upset, not to say frightened by his attitude. This is a second-hand report from Mr. S. And she showed Winston the often inaccurate, but in this case specifically accurate guidelines given by the hosts on these occasions, which says that indeed panhandling is one thing, playing for a musical performance for music for a donation is another. You're allowed to have a display device, an open cup, an open guitar case. Winston insisted she'd been there an hour. He said, Suzanne said, document that for me. He said, I've been by her 10 times. He said, when was the last time? She didn't mention that he asked to warn her as well. In any case, she eventually did move 100 feet away, which wasn't necessary, and she'll be coached further on that. But to see people standing up and fighting for their rights, or at least asserting their rights, is certainly a positive step. Thank you, Suzanne. Thank you, Mr. S.
Now we're returning to, again, some final notes on that last city council meeting of December 9th and the final 4 minutes of our show.
So it looks like the council chambers are less full than usual. It looks like there's a sort of a scattering of people along the walls. All the seats are filled, but it's not crowded, as usually is the case after elections. Ed, what do you make of this? I'm talking with Ed Davis.
Well, I think that those who wanted to be here are here, and those who couldn't care less
couldn't care less.
But on the other hand, this is also the eve of the budget cuts, and of course that item just, you know, finished on the agenda. I guess all those people left.
Well, some of the issues, the people who are here to speak on those particulars, but that's something that's basically kicked down the road till January anyway. And for whatever it's worth, and I'm not participating in it, this is not an easy time for the city. The revenues are...
Dick Wilson is really suffering a lot. He's probably, you know, may have to cut back his postpone his 3% increases, but, you know, gosh, I don't think it's too hard for him.
I think that's going to be one of the symbolic things, is for the council members and the department heads to be...
Very symbolic. We're talking about substance.
Dick Wilson, of course, is the city manager for life.
That's one of the reasons that I just spoke out at City Council, because we just heard Tony Madrigal doing the oath of office, when he pledges to uphold the laws, but he won't even uphold the right to basic public comment at these meetings. He won't uphold the right for police to be accountable. So I don't know. It's interesting that everyone here is, of course, eager to do the little applause thing. Little discouraging.
I don't think the city's even reckoned with the amount of revenue losses we're going to have, tax revenue decreases. Sales tax revenue is going to be off. It's possible that hotel occupancy tax is going to be off over the next year. People are going to want reassessments of their overpriced houses.
Mm-hmm.
So we make it lose some property tax revenues.
Right.
There's dimensions to this upcoming recession, and I have the feeling that next year is going to be worse than this year in terms of employment.
That's the general prediction.
Tax revenues certainly on the federal government and the state government are all going to be affected, and local governments are all going to be affected.
Right.
And this is not an easy time coming ahead, and Dick Wilson's going to have his hands full trying to keep the city running and the programs running at the time when they have to cut back on personnel, etc. They have to do it. They have to budget it, balance their budget. They don't have any other way of doing it.
We've been talking with
Ed Davidson.
Thank you, Ed.
Item C, conference with legal counsel regarding anticipated litigation. Two cases were discussed, and no report of action was taken. Item D, the council discussed claims 1, 2, 3, and 5. Claim 4 was not discussed. Council gave direction for settlement of claim 1 and postponement of claim 3, and claims were acted on in open session. Item E, the council conducted performance evaluations to manager.
Thank you very much. That was our city attorney report. Council memberships in city groups and outside agencies, a chance for brief comments.
And this is all kind of preparatory to oral communication, which finally comes up at the end of the meeting.
Thank you, but now I'm looking back at my feet. I just really want to use this opportunity also to thank outgoing council members around the corner for the night's out. Thank you all. It was a pleasure working with you, too.
Thank you.
That's Tony Madden.
And finally, we will have oral communications. We will have that for 10 minutes, maximum of 2 minutes per person. If anyone would like.
Oral communications is normally 30 minutes, and it was 3 minutes per person. Notice how Matthews is following in Coonerty's footsteps by cutting back both the amount of time allowed per speaker, now only 2 minutes, plus the total amount of time, 30 minutes, now down to 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. Congratulations. My name is Gillian Greenside. I first want to just say I hope the Council is aware that there was on the police blot a reported rape of a woman at 8 a.m. Sunday on the 1300 block of Pacific Avenue. There seemed to be nothing in the Sentinel. I hope you know about that. But I've come here to talk about the budget. What I saw this afternoon was you're putting on the chopping block the sacred things of Santa Cruz. I don't need to list them because you are aware of them. Surfing Museum, the beach flat community center. What?
We did deal with.
Okay, fine. Then I'm not. Well, I'm just saying that I think that was omitted. Was any mention of the fact that? Well, now you've thrown me for a loop. Okay, can't talk what's on the agenda. So what can I talk about? I think that you are.
And what's happening here is that the mayor is not only cut short oral communications. She's now saying that this speaker, Jillian Greenside, is not going to be allowed to speak on items because they had previously been talked about during the agenda time in the afternoon when most people couldn't attend. But in fact, Greenside was referring to decisions that were made as well as items on the agenda. And so she can't. It's complex and technical, and my showtime is over. So I'm just going to leave. Skidmark Bob here is going to kind of fill in for Uncle Dennis, who's off, you know, whooping it up somewhere. I want to thank Attorney David Beauvais for being on the air with me. David, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
And you just better watch your step, as far as I'm concerned. As I say that to everyone, of course, watch your step and have a good time if you can. I'll be back on Sunday, 9:30, actually 8:30 in the morning again. Special anti-psychiatry show around Laura's Law, the law that makes it actually much easier to commit people, require them to take psychiatric medication and so forth. What's the status of that law in California? Well, we'll find out from some experts on Sunday morning. That's it for now. And Skidmark, what you got for us tonight?
Still up, don't you?
Mic is up.
Well, I don't know what's going on in the other room there, but we got some programming coming up for you. Don't ask me what exactly, but we'll start off with some Xmas tunes.
He knows when you run sleeping. He knows when you're.
December 25th, and although Christians celebrate this day as the birth of the biblical character Jesus Christ, no specific references were recorded in the first 2 centuries A.D. as to the precise date of the alleged birth. Early in the 4th century A.D., church leaders concerned with the spread of Mithraism, the Persian religion which worshipped the sun god Mithras, designated December 25th, the Mithraic holy date, as Christ's official birthday. The first recorded celebration of the birth of Christ occurred in Rome in AD 336. The celebration of the birth of Christ also superseded the pagan winter solstice celebrations, which occurred in late December.
On this day in 1837, the Battle of Lake Okeechobee was fought between 800 U.S. Army troops under the command of future President Colonel Zachary Taylor and an estimated 380 Seminole warriors, with Taylor's troops sustaining major casualties compared to only a few on the Indian side. After the battle, the shores of Lake Okeechobee returned to frontier obscurity, and the Second Seminole War went on for 5 more years.
On this day in 1914, all was quiet on the Western Front. Just after midnight, the majority of German troops in the front engaged in a ceasefire and began to sing carols. At the break of dawn, many German soldiers emerged from their trenches and approached the Allies' lines across the neutral zone, calling Merry Christmas in their enemies' native tongues. At first, Allied soldiers thought this was a trick, but soon climbed out of their trenches to shake hands and exchange gifts and sing Christmas carols with the German soldiers. The Christmas truce lasted a few days.
And on this day in 1979, the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan, ostensibly to restore the socialist government which had established itself in 1978 following decades of civil war. Although the socialist regime made great strides in liberalizing education and establishing schools, hospitals, roads, and literacy, opposition factions waged a continuous multi-front low-grade guerrilla war, especially in the country's rural areas. The United States saw this as an opportunity to draw the Soviet Union into a proxy war, and so armed several of the Afghan factions. The Soviet Union intervened in accordance with a 1978 Mutual Assistance Treaty. However, the Soviet occupation was rather brutal, and many Afghanis were either killed or fled to neighboring countries. And those are just some of the events that happened on this day, December 25th. This Day in History is a production of the Neighborhood Network in Columbus, Ohio. I'm Enid Quinn.
And I'm Evan Davis.
Yes, yes, yes. It is that time of year again, folks. Little Yuletide Zeppelin. Uncle Dennis can't make it, of course, this holiday. Usually he's out on holidays. So I'll be in here covering for him for a little bit. Skidmark Bob here. Cream of the Dregs. Xmas 2008.